Okay, this coming Shabbos, we are going to be reading Parshas Devarim, and of course, the book of Devarim is Moshe Rabbeinu's opportunity to give the final swan song, and the Mefarshim referred to Sefer Devarim as Sefer HaYashar, at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, simply because it's the Sefer that teaches us Ve'asisa HaYashar VeHatov. It's the Sefer whose mitzvahs teach us how to go Lefnim Meshuras Hadin. And of course, with that in mind, we begin the Sefer. Eila HaDvarim, the Torah tells us, these are the words. And Moshe Rabbeinu opens up the book of Devarim with some of the harshest Musar for the Jewish people who had committed many different sins during their 40 years together. And so he veils those episodes so as not to embarrass him. Now, why does Moshe Rabbeinu wait 40 years for giving Musar? Why not give it sooner? So Rashi notes that Yaakov Avinu also waited until the end of his life to offer Musar. Why was that? The late great Rav Noach Weinberg Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the founder of Eishat Torah, explained that when it comes to giving rebuke, leaders have to pick their battles. Rebuking the nation every single time the members of a nation commit an Avera will lead the words of the one giving the Musar to become a broken record, not worthy of being heard. A good leader knows when he's supposed to say something, and he knows that the word will have impact. It's not just what you say and who says it, but what time you say it. A good leader knows when to say something and knows that the word will have impact. And the same is not only true for a leader, but also for parents. We are leaders for our children. Our parents, our children look up to us. So the parent who's always critical will eventually be the parent who's also just simply ignored. Criticism needs to be but one of the many tools that we use, together with other tools, in a coordinated manner that effectively encourage our children, not drive our children away. Then Moshe Rabbeinu reminds the people, "Panu usulachem." He says, "Go ahead, turn yourselves and travel for yourselves." And then he says, "Uvo har amori chol she'enav ad nahar hagadol nahar pras," until you get to the great river Nahar Pras. So Rashi explains that the reason the river is called Great Hagadol is because it's connected to the land of Israel. Now, if you go back to your understanding of the book of Bereishis, there the smallest river is Pras. Here, it's called Gadol because it's mentioned in connection to Eretz Yisrael. The late great Rosh Yeshiva Mir of Nassim Tzvi Finkel Zatzal noted that those who have the merit to live in the land of Israel certainly can understand the significance. It may be the smallest dot of a country, but the importance is not limited to Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak. It's still a critical country. And it's not just, the land is Kadosh, not just in Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak. The entire land has Kedusha, the entire land is Hagadol. And it's for that reason that the nations of the world continue to fly rockets and burning kites over Israel. They want to take down the land with Kedusha. And that's what they fight over. That's what they fight for. Get rid of the Kedusha Saaretz. But we will not let that happen, because our Kedusha is very clear to us. Moshe Rabbeinu is told, Be'er es HaTorah Hazos. Moshe Rabbeinu explained the Torah. And Rashi explains that, what does that mean? He explained it. Rashi says that means that he translated the Torah into 70 languages. Now, why would Moshe Rabbeinu translate the Torah into 70 languages? And most of the people around him didn't speak all 70 languages. What does he need the translation for? So Rav Amital Zatzal, the famous founder of Har Etzion, explained that the 70 languages, they speak to 70 different cultures. And what the message was here was that the Torah has something to say about all 70 cultures. And similarly, the Torah specifies the timing of these words. This is because the Torah wishes to teach us that Moshe's words were not disconnected from either the place or the time where they were spoken. The Torah has a message for each generation, and that the Torah must be applied to each generation. And here, what's being emphasized is that Moshe adapted his words to the specific time and place where they were spoken. It has something to say even there. So Moshe Rabbeinu turns and he tells the people he can't handle them all by himself. So he says, Havu lachem anashim chachamim. Find yourselves anashim. And Tosis in Baba Kam on Daf Tes Vav Amud Aleph notes that there's a difference of opinion as to whether a woman can be a dayan or not. And Tosis wonders, how can a woman possibly be a dayan if we hold that one who is unable to testify cannot judge? And by halachic standards, a woman cannot testify in cases. So Tosis answers that the issue of those who can't testify, cannot judge, ain't aid nasa dayan, is a rule that applies to men. But women are excluded for other reasons. So Moreno Rav Shechter, Shalita, would mention in the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal, who would explain by noting that it's the psu that makes the difference. One who's puzzled from testifying is also puzzled from judgment. Women aren't puzzled from testifying. They're just not included in the realm of judgment. They're not included in the realm of testimony. And that's apparent here in the Pasuk, where Moshe Rabbeinu selects judges who are Anoshim. And Rashi says it was obvious that the women were not supposed to judge, and therefore an additional limud can be determined from the word Anoshim, Avulochem Anoshim. Now many have argued that the Sefer Achinuch allows women to judge, because we see that when the Sefer Achinuch discusses the mitzvah of not judging when a person is inebriated, the Sefer Achinuch says that mitzvah applies to men and women. And Rav Shechter would cite the Pesachei Tshuva and Choshen Mishpat, Siman Zayin, who notes the apparent contradiction in his words, because there are other instances where the Pesachei Tshuva notes that the punishment for taking bribes is a mitzvah that applies to men, but not women, because women can't judge. So the Pesachei Tshuva makes that apparent contradiction and solves it by noting that as far as issues of Issa V'Heter are concerned, a woman who knows the answers should provide them. But she cannot provide them when she is in a state of inebriation. But in regard to actual judgment, Choshen Mishpat, she cannot join a Beis Din, and therefore the rules of Beis Din, like taking bribes, are not going to be relevant to her. Adkan. Moshe Rabbeinu later refers to the fact that the spies came back and referred to Arim Gidolosu Bitzuros Bashamayim, great and huge cities that reached the heavens. And Rashi reminds us that these words were understood as exaggerations. Now, why would the Torah use language that wasn't emes, it wasn't true? Why state something that's not honest? So the Stibler in Archos Yosher suggests that when the exaggeration is used poetically, it leaves no concern that the words are not meant to be taken literally. And so then the exaggeration is not in the category of sheker. But if once the words are left to be open to interpretation and can be used to deceive, then they can't be used at all. We find a similar concept in defense of the Stipler's position in regard to Nidarim. We assume that Nidrei Havai were never meant to be Nidarim at all. We assume that when a person takes a neder havai, everybody assumes that the exaggeration was not meant to be a neder. The person was saying, "I swear, I saw a snake as big as a base habad. The snake was as big as an olive press." The fact of the matter is, it's so crazy that everyone knows what he meant to see is he saw a really huge snake, and so therefore a neder would not be chal there either. It's not sheker. A person should be careful not to do, as we state in Eicha, Limdu Lishonam Dabir Shav. We have to be careful, but then there's a question of making a point. Vatashuvu Vatifku Lifnei Hashem. You sat and cried in front of Hashem, and Hashem didn't hear your voices. And the Medrash in Eicha explains that at the time of the Churban, our prayers weren't accepted by Hashem. Rabbi Genach Shalita explained, also in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that's why on Tisha B'Av we don't say Tiskabot Salosan, and that's why on Tisha B'Av we don't say Tachnon, because on those days Tfilos and Tachanunim are not usually likely to be accepted, because Hashem, the Pasuk says, Lo Hezin Lachem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't listen to us. We're told, finally, Al Tatzer Es Moav Al Tiskar B'Mochama, we're told, don't distress Moav, nor start a war with them. And the Gemara Brava Kama on Daf Lamed Ches Amad Aleph notes that we're not allowed to start up with Moav despite the fact that they directly attacked us. Because Hashem has two beautiful birds, Ferdos Tovos, Rus and Nama, who are destined to come from Moav and Ammon. So the Mishnah Melech quotes the Chachmei Ashkenaz, who asks, why if the present generation deserves to be destroyed, why are future generations able to be taken in consideration? And Rav Shimon Zecher Tzadok Livracha answered, though all we can't use the logic of Kal V'Chomer and the death of an individual to say in Onshin Min Adin, sometimes we could have used that logic to punish the entire nation. And so therefore Hashem had to specifically tell us that wasn't okay, and that he didn't want us to start up with Moav. We don't have a right to go ahead and start up with Moav, even though Kal Vachomer-wise, we might have been able to make an argument in favor of destroying them. If we're supposed to destroy the Sheva Amamin, then for sure, and we're supposed to destroy Midian, then certainly we should destroy Moav. Moav were the ones who did the deed. Midian only gave the suggestion. Notwithstanding, we're told, Al Tatsiris Moav, Al Tiskarbam Mechama. We shouldn't cause stress to Moav. We shouldn't cause them to have a war. Finally, in the Haftorah, we're told, Loso Sifu Avi Minchashav. You shouldn't continue to bring a useless mincha. That's what Yishayo and Avi tells us. And Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal pointed out that a carbon is made up of two parts. The physical laws that govern the animal itself and how it's supposed to be offered, and the mindset of the person bringing the carbon. Each type of carbon comes with its own specifications as to the gender, the age, and the species, as well as the laws as to how it's to be offered and when, if at all, it's to be eaten. However, no less important is the requisite mindset of the person bringing the carbon. The carbon is supposed to inspire thoughts of tshuva and genuine introspection. So watching an animal being slaughtered is supposed to make a person stop, think, and internalize the fact that when a person does an avera, it destroys him, and instead of him, the carbon stands in its place. And so herein, says Rav Schwab, was the mistake of Kayin, who he understood the physical concept of carbon, but he didn't understand the spirit of the law. And Hashem doesn't want that. And the same issue appears again in the time of Shaul HaMelech, who shows Rachmanos on the sheep of Amalek in order to bring them as a carbon to Hashem. And he too was rebuked by Hashem. Hachafetz Hashem ba'olo suzvachim. Does God really want that? He wants us to listen. And Yishayahu HaNavi again rebukes the Jews at the time leading up to the Churban for their lack of personality and authenticity when they offered their karbanos. In other words, in all of these instances, the same theme, the Kayin theme results. Don't just throw the animal and make a barbecue. There has to be a part of you that's involved in the karbon. Ironically, says Rav Schwab, the opposite is true in the times of Churban by Hasheni. There the attitude was more, I'm all right as long as I feel spiritually connected. And perhaps that's the outgrowth of the selfishness and self-centeredness that was prevalent during the generation that was guilty of Sinas Chinam, which destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Having the audacity to redefine spirituality on one's own terms, whether believing it to be mental or physical, is an act of self-centeredness and is an act of destruction. We have a responsibility to overcome those actions. That's part of why we sit on the ground. Sometimes we don't do the actions, and sometimes we don't have the right spirit. And if we can turn ourselves around and pick up both pieces, then we will get the opportunity to once again have a chance to bring the Menachos together with all the other Karbanos when we get the chance to go back Letzion Berina. I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom.